Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with a remarkable 92-year-old Lawson Sakai. There's been a lot of activity in California's Silicon Valley lately, with Super Bowl 50 taking center stage. But when I caught up with Mr. Sakai at his home in Morgan Hill, he was getting ready to throw on his Steph Curry jersey in preparation for an intense game of bridge. During World War II, it wasn't fun and games, but life and death. And we're going to hear how he became part of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, known famously as the go-for-broke unit of Japanese-American soldiers fighting for a country that had imprisoned their families. We heard how Lawson Sakai's family avoided the internment camps. With help from their church, the Sakais were able to move from California to Colorado. When you're there in Colorado, on the western slope of the Rockies, was there any fear that you might be rounded up there and sent to one of the camps?
Well, I'm not sure about that. The governor, Governor Carr, had given us assurance that we were welcome there, whether the people thought that way. Of course, he got voted out of office the next term. But I never had any problem in Colorado either. Everyone was fine, got along with everybody.
And I imagine now you look back and say, boy, it's a really good thing I went to Colorado. Because if you didn't, you wouldn't have met your wife, right?
That's true. You know, and there's a lot of good that can come out of things like that. I think of this architect. His name was Min Yamasaki. He was in Seattle, graduated UW, was an architect, but he couldn't get a decent job, you know, West Coast. Because of the evacuation, he had to go east, Midwest, east, ended up in New York. Credentials, got a good job, became America's premier architect. He's the one that designed the Twin Towers. Mm-hmm. So, he could never have done that in the West Coast.
Yeah. Well, and I know you have perspective, too, on your wife's family. And your father-in-law was the Garlic King of Gilroy, and he gets taken away. And thankfully, there was a trust that preserved some of that land. But why don't you tell me the story of how you met your wife in Colorado? This is before you ever end up in the Army and in the 442.
Well, we first moved to Delta, Colorado, which is 40 miles south of Grand Junction, which is a small city, but still the largest city on the western slope. And Mesa College was like Compton Junior College. So she was going there, and I enrolled. I moved up from Delta, and I found a job as a houseboy for my room and board, uh-huh, and went to school. That's how I met her. That was like mid-1942. And of course, early 1943, they decided they would form the 442nd. So when I got the opportunity in March, I volunteered to go. I had to go to Denver, the draft board, and sign up and all that kind of stuff.
Had you volunteered before?
Well, I tried to get it in December 8th. It was when 1941 was when I was trying to get into the anything, Army, Navy, whatever.
So the day after they come and take your uncle, you went to sign up for the military.
Well, I'm going to school. I had three of my classmates and I, all from Montebello, going to different schools. And I had a car, so Ed Hartage and Roy Kettner and Jimmy Keyes and myself, we went down to the Navy station in Long Beach. And of course, Ed, Roy, Jimmy, they were accepted. And I'm next. Sorry, we can't take you. And I said, why not? I'm an American. He says, I'm sorry, but you're not classified 1A. You're now classified 4C. And enemy alien, so I couldn't join anything. So, mm-hmm.
So you had tried then, and now fast forward to Colorado, and then once they open up the 442, you signed up. But with regard to meeting your wife, what was it about her that caught your eye?
Well, I think there weren't that many Japanese students, of course. We used to see each other after school, And they used, in those days, they used to do a lot of roller skating. Like we'd meet on the skating rink a lot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in those days, there was one movie theater. We could go to the movie theater once in a while. And there wasn't too much to do in Colorado. In the winter, it's not really snow then, but it just freezes over.
Yeah. Well, and one more thought before we get to your time with the 442. I know, I'm sure, you've met and knew then a lot of families who were in the camps, and you weren't. When you think back on that, are you thankful that you and your family didn't have that experience, or do you have mixed emotions about it?
I think we were lucky that the church found a place for us to go. And these people in Colorado met us sight unseen at a certain place in Delta. And
so that was through the church, too?
Yeah. Showed us to a home and said, this is where you're going to live. Yeah, I think camp life, it ruined a lot of families. Of course, the young kids had a lot of fun because they could play all day.
Right.
And maybe all night, too, you know. And there was very little family control because it was just an open camp and there was very little privacy.
Right.
So, and you were not alone, you were with other families. And so it wasn't a good atmosphere. But as far as having fun, playing ball, the kids are, you know, just having a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they didn't have any worries like the parents, of course.
Yeah, much different for them.
Yeah.
And so many never got back their assets or their land, their possessions.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So the parents really suffered. That's the thing that it's hard for us to understand how they handled all that. You know, you'd think they would have revolted or something, but they realized that they were helpless, you might say.
You're talking about the church, and it almost sounds, and I hope this parallel isn't out of line, but with your family's experience, your Seventh-day Adventist church was almost like your own underground railroad. That's kind of what it sounds like, right? I mean,
yes.
They kept it, that's the only thing that kept you from getting in a camp, right?
That's right. And I'm sure we weren't the only families. There were some other, the Quakers were very good. I think they were probably strong in some eastern states, maybe Pennsylvania or some other, and they helped move whoever was able to east to other locations, not Colorado, but any other place, because you could move any place out of Washington, Oregon, California and be okay, but you had to find a place, and probably 99% of the Japanese people had no knowledge of anybody outside of California, so it was pretty hard for them to pick up and leave.
Mm-hmm. And so you never experienced life inside a camp, but you were part of, with the 442nd, a big overwhelming message that these Americans are every bit as American as anybody that looks like anything else.
Yeah, the thing is, they all had to volunteer. It wasn't a drafted organization.
And a lot of them volunteered right from the camps.
Yes.
And you volunteered from college in Colorado. What was it that made you want to jump at that opportunity?
Well, I've been itching to try to get into something since December 7. In Mesa College, I actually enrolled in a V-12 program, which I was in for a month before they kicked me out.
It took them that long to find out you were Japanese-American, or what?
You know, in Nebraska, this fellow named Ben Kuroki got into the Air Force and flew like 50-some missions, both in Europe and Asia. But they probably thought he was Polish or something. Kuroki, you know?
So they really didn't know you were Japanese-American
at
first.
In my case, yes, they did.
Oh, they did. Okay. But so after a month, why'd they kick you out of the V-12?
Oh, at school. Well, yeah. You know, they just discovered that I was Japanese.
So when you signed up, they didn't pick up on it. But once they saw you in all the classes, they said, hey, wait a second here. I just want people to understand how different things were back then. So then you end up in this 442nd Regimental Combat Team with all these other Japanese-American soldiers. And I'm sure you heard some stories about their families and the camps and what they've been through.
Oh, yeah. you know, they would get correspondence. That one thing that really was amazing, we had these happy-go-lucky guys from Hawaii, about 1,500, 2,000 of them, who were there before we were. So they had all the non-com positions sewed up, and we're showing up. They came all at once. Mm-hmm. We're showing up from the mainland from all over different camps or out of camps, but one or two at a time. So we're March, April, May, June, they were just straggling in. So the people from Hawaii would get these letters. First thing they do, they open it and shake the letter, and the blue cards would come out. They're all money orders.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's working in Hawaii.
Yeah.
You know, making big money at the army bases and so forth. People in camps, if they're working, they made, what, $18 a month or whatever. You know, so they got letters, nothing else, just letters. Mm-hmm. And, of course, a very somber attitude here and a very happy-go-lucky attitude here. And really, like two different cultures completely.
I imagine so. What would you say your motivation was?
That's what people ask all the time. I think the primary motivation was, if you're an American, you should fight for your country. And I think all of us, that's the way we thought. And none of us, when we did so, thought we'd come home alive. We said, well, war is war. You're going to get killed. But that's what you have to do. Because the Nisei, which the firstborn, if we didn't do it, who's going to do it for the parents who came here to start the whole thing? There's nobody going to stand up for them. Mm-hmm. We're the first generation. We're the ones that have to do it. And it turned out good, but, it just, at the time, 1941, 1942, the atmosphere was so anti-Japanese. It's just unbelievable.
I saw an article recently where they dug up some Life magazines from 1942, mm-hmm. where the cover article was how to tell a Japanese from a Chinese, diagramming facial features so you know who's the enemy and who's not.
Oh, boy.
And that's how your entire heritage was classified at the time. So here you are in the 442nd, and you said it all worked out well. And it worked out well for you, but so many Japanese Americans died over there. And you were part of the most famous exploit of the 442nd, where a lot of Japanese American lives were sacrificed to save a lot of Caucasian Americans in that case.
Well, I don't know if...
I don't think that was the aim, but that was the end result, right?
Well, yeah, sacrificed. It's kind of hard to say sacrificed because war is war. You're trying to kill them. They're trying to kill you. People are going to get killed right or wrong. When orders are given, and that's how armies work, orders are issued and you obey. And if you die, you die. You know, that's the way it goes. If you're not doing anything on the 13th, next Saturday, we're having a program right down here in Morgan Hill. The feature story is about the battle to rescue the lost battalion. Mm-hmm. We have one veteran that we rescued living in Santa Clara. We're going to have him here.
Is that Al Tortolano?
Al Tortolano.
I had Al on the show. Yeah, neat guy.
I'm the rescuer.
Yeah.
We have an author of a book about the lost battalions. We'll have a panel. We did the program last year in August on the Hornet, where we have an exhibit.
Right.
And there were about 300 people there. And a lot of people didn't go or couldn't go and asked if we could do it again. So that's why we're doing it next
Super.
Saturday here. So if you're around, you can come in. Listen in on our stories.
Well, I think you're speaking to the right audience that might want to take you up on that. And maybe somebody listening right now was there on the USS Hornet in Alameda when you shared your stories. But I know the vast majority of you following Hometown Heroes on all of our different radio affiliates did not have that opportunity. So here are the details. It's Saturday, February 13th in Morgan Hill, California. That's just south of San Jose off the 101 freeway. It's going to start at 11:30 a.m., you have Mr. Sakai, one of the rescuers, Al Tortolano, one of the 211 men of the Lost Battalion who were rescued that day, and author Franz Steidel, who wrote the book Lost Battalions. They're all going to be there for a panel discussion, and I have those details and the address of the community center where it'll be held at hometownheroesradio.com. A very rare opportunity to hear different perspectives on one of World War II's most powerful moments from men whose lives were at stake in the midst of it. It's free, and it's next Saturday, February 13th in Morgan Hill, California. Definitely drivable for most of you listening on all our stations in the Golden State today. We'll explore that rescue of the Lost Battalion in late October 1944 when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's RV Country within driving distance of this radio station. But really, it doesn't matter where you live, because Paul Everett has a fly and buy program that will fly you to any of his locations to buy your new RV. It's one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Serving RVers for 55 years, you'll find Paul Everett's RV Country throughout the West and online at rvcountry.com. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say, I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting rvcountry.com.